Happy January 25th, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm Dan Bednar. I'm reading to you today from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. We are so glad to have you listening. Let's start by having a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. Today's weather, high of 27, a low of 14. Expect a west-northwest wind around 9 miles per hour and cloudy skies. Here are the headlines. Two life sentences. Tanner King was convicted of a double murder. Lytton man arrested for attempted murder. Victim walked to work before calling for help. Ben Bean to retire from the Iowa Senate. He has served for six terms since 1996. Trial highlights, Dems cry cover-up, Trump hails activists. After a grueling trial, the state wishes were formally delivered Friday morning. Tanner King will spend the rest of his life in prison without the possibility of parole, barring the success of an appeal filed immediately after the sentence was pronounced. King's sentence came down after a Story County jury convicted him of killing L. Dominic and Marion Rhodes in October 2018, the result of a three-week trial. Their bodies were found behind King's apartment building near 2nd Avenue North and 9th Street in Fort Dodge. The nature of the offense, of your conduct, and generally your attitude are set forth in the record of the proceedings, said District Court Judge Kurt Stobe. I don't think there's any hope you could be that you could be rehabilitated or deterred. To the extent Stobe did have discretion over sentencing, he chose the most severe option. The two sentences mandatory for the pair of first-degree murder convictions will be served consecutively as requested by First Assistant County Attorney Ryan Baldridge. This is two separate acts, two separate victims, Baldridge said. Because of that, I think it is more than appropriate to set the sentence consecutively to show the victim's family and community that each life is worth a separate sentence. Stobe explained that sentencing someone to consecutive instead of concurrent sentences matters should any convictions be commuted or changed in sentencing laws be made. The state also requested $150,000 in victim restitution and about $29,000 more in reimbursement to the Crime Victim Assistance Fund that helped the family members of the Rhodes brothers attend trial. But for a man spending the rest of his life in prison, expectations for the ability to repay the massive debt are severely diminished. The judgment against him will likely be more symbolic than anything material for the families and for the state that have invested myriad emotions and considerable sum of money in securing what they hope will be his last convictions. Money isn't the only thing that has been lost, though. When you have your siblings, they are along with you for the adventures of your life, whether good or bad, said the victim's sister, Carolyn Rhodes, in her victim impact statement. Tanner snatched that away from me. Can you imagine having a mother with memory loss that asks for her sons? She continued. You must tell her they have gone from this earth. Their sister, who attended nearly all of the trial, said she will march forward with the memories. Saturday morning calls, a calming presence in the conflict, a protector, an encourager. I will push forward with the love that Marion and Dominic had always shown us, she said. You have taken them away in flesh, but never in love and memory. But even justice can't fill the void left in the waking moment, described as lonely and empty. Before the sentence was handed down, Staub ruled on motions filed by defense earlier this week asking for a new trial and arrest judgment. In it, they accused the court of erring on questions of law during the trial, and the verdict was contrary to evidence that could not, as a matter of law, have established guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, and reiterated claims of a prejudicial conduct by the prosecutors. Defense attorney Paul Rounds accused investigator Larry Hedlund of Fort Dodge Police Department of ramrodding King as a suspect of confirmation bias throughout the trial. In other flashpoints in the court, the defense accused the state of withholding evidence that would have proved King's innocence. Rounds and co-counsel Catherine Flickinger made many points on the record simply for posterity, as the case takes on a life of its own during the appeal process. The court does not believe all of what every witness said, Staub ruled, citing King's admission to being a liar on the witness stand as a notable example. One instruction given to the jury was that it was up to them to decide who was credible as they meted out a just verdict. As for the defense suggestion of a lack of evidence supporting premeditation and malice, Staub said that the victims were shot multiple times. As it turned out, the accusations in November and December weren't the last ones the court would hear in the King case. At Friday morning's sentencing hearing, Baldridge accused defense investigators of continuing to harass families of the victims, asking the court to extend a no-contact order to anyone attempting to contact the families on behalf of King. We have heard from at least one state witness that the defense investigator was essentially harassed at least one of the victims in the case repeatedly, he said. Baldridge said that after being told to stop, the investigator went to her residence on four separate occasions last week. The defense denied the allegations. Staub denied the state's request, saying that such a no-contact order went too far and would effectively deny due process to King as he filed any appeal within the next 30 days. King's lead defense attorney wasted no time in doing so, filing a notice of appeal to the Supreme Court immediately after the sentencing hearing and requesting an appellate attorney for King to allow the trial attorneys to withdraw. King offered no personal statement during the sentencing. The victim of a stabbing Thursday night walked several blocks from the scene of the alleged crime to his workplace before he radioed for help, according to Sac County Sheriff Ken McClure. The Sac County Sheriff's Office said that Luke Clark, age 47, was stabbed in the 600 block of Railway Street in Lytton shortly before 9:30 p.m. by David Littlefield, age 57, who is charged with attempted murder and going armed with intent. The sheriff's office said that the victim, who was stabbed at least twice, walked to Essentia Protein Solutions, where he worked, and radioed for help. Sheriff's officials arrested Littlefield at his home in the 200 block of Oak Street in Lytton shortly after that. They obtained bloody clothing and a knife while executing a search warrant. Clark was transferred by ambulance to Loring Hospital in Sac City before being transferred to Sioux City Hospital. His current condition is unknown. Attempted murder is a Class B felony, punishable by 25 years in prison. Going armed with intent is a Class D felony, punishable by a prison term of up to 5 years. State Senator Jerry Bean Republican of Boone, announced on Friday his plans to retire from the Iowa Senate. Bean said he will retire when his sixth term comes to an end at the end of the year. "I want to thank my constituents for the honor of representing them in the Iowa Senate all these years," Bean said. "It has been one of the greatest privileges I have been bestowed. I am proud of the work I've done and the policies we have put into place these last few years to grow our economy and attract businesses to our state and encourage smaller government." Bean, who has been farming for 47 years, was first elected to the Iowa Senate in 1996. He served as Boone County Supervisor from 1995 to 96. He was last elected in 2016 when he defeated Ken Putney in the Iowa Senate District 24 general election. His Senate district includes Boone, Greene County, and Hamilton counties, plus southeastern Webster County. "During my term in the Iowa Senate, I was proud to cast a vote for the largest income tax in Iowa history at the time," Bean said. "I was equally proud of my vote during my last term to support an even larger income tax cut, keeping my promise to voters to reduce their tax burden." Bean served as Republican leader in 2012 and currently serves as president pro tem. He serves as the vice chair on ethics committee, and he also serves in the education rules and administration, natural resources and ways and means committee. Bean is a member of the Farm Bureau, Iowa Soybean Association, National Rifle Association, and Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Bean is a graduate of United Community High School. It's now 8:10, and we move now to page 2, and we have the Messenger poll. Do you favor ratifying Equal Rights Amendment and adding it to the Constitution? The Messenger poll is updated weekly. Answers and new questions will be published on Sundays. And on this date in history, today is Saturday, January 25th, the 25th day of 2020. There are 341 days left in the year. Today's highlights: on January 25th, America's first official transcontinental telephone call took place between Alexander Graham Bell, who was in New York and spoke to his former assistant, Thomas Watson, who was in San Francisco, over the line set up by American Telephone and Telegraph. On this date, in 1863, during the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln accepted Major General Ambrose E. Burnside's resignation as commander of the Army of the Potomac and replaced him with Major General Joseph Hooker. In 1924, the first Winter Olympic Games opened in Chamonix, France. In 1945, the World War II Battle of the Bulge ended as German forces were pushed back to their original positions. Grand Rapids, Michigan became the first community to add fluoride to its public water system. In 1947, gangster Al Capone died in Miami Beach, Florida, at the age of 48. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy held the first presidential news conference to be carried live on radio and television. In 1981, 52 Americans held hostage by Iran for 444 days arrived in the United States. In 1993, Sears announced that it would no longer publish its famous century-old catalog. In 1998, Pope John Paul II ended his historic journey to Cuba. In 2017, President Donald Trump moved aggressively to tighten the nation's immigration controls, signing executive actions to jumpstart construction of his promised U.S.-Mexico border wall and cut federal grants for immigrant-protecting sanctuary cities. Death claimed actress Mary Tyler Moore at the age of 80 and actor John Hurt at age 77. 10 years ago, Iraq hanged al-Hassan al-Majid, known as Chemical Ali, for his role in gassing 5,000 people in a Kurdish village. 5 years ago, Birdman won the Best Ensemble from the Screen Actors Guild, a day after winning the top honor for at the Production Guild Awards. 1 year ago, Roger Stone was arrested by the FBI in a pre-dawn raid at his Florida home and charged with lying about his pursuit of Russian-hacked emails damaging to Hillary Clinton's 2016 election bid. Stone was convicted in November of 2019 on charges including lying to Congress and witness tampering. He is awaiting sentencing in February. Thought for today, a first-rate organizer is never in a hurry. He is never late. He always keeps up his sleeve, a margin of unexpected. And this is Arnold Bennett, English poet and author and critic, 1867 to 1931. We go to page 3 now, and it's 8:16. Here is the community calendar. Eggs and Issues, Legislative Forum, 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., Iowa Central Community College, Bioscience and Health Science Building, 1 Triton Circle, free admission. Alano Club, 9:30 a.m., Women's Meeting, 12 North 7th Street, Bets Off Gambling Anonymous, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Community and Family Resources, 726 South 17th Street, KYL Movie for Kids, 10:30 a.m. to noon at the Kendall Young Library in Webster City, Blandon Memorial Art Museum, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., 920 3rd Avenue South, admission is free. Kotsky Lazy Ike Show, noon to 2 p.m., Gowrie Fire Station in Gowrie. A.A. Alano Club, noon, North 12th, 7th Street. A.A. Alano, Cross Country Skiing, 2 p.m. at Camp Wanoke, 2401 Wanoke Camp Road. No fee, free will offerings accepted. A.A. Non-Smoking Club, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., Trinity Regional Medical Center, second floor conference room 2B. NA 7 to 8 p.m. Shalom Center, 501 North 12th Street. Dayton Wranglers Pony Express Dance, 6:30 p.m. to midnight. Best Western Starlight Village Inn and Suites, 1518 3rd Avenue Northwest. Adult tickets are $5. Children are 17 and under are $3. Tank Anthony Band, 7 to 9 p.m. at the River Hops Brewing, 1014 Central Avenue. It is now 8:17, and we're going to move now to the editorial section. Here is the Messenger editorial, Smithsonian Democracy Exhibit, Coming to Fort Dodge. It presents an opportunity no one should miss. Most Fort Dodge residents know that the Smithsonian, sometimes called the nation's attic, is a collection of museums in Washington, D.C. that house everything from Archie Bunker's chair to the Apollo space capsule. But not all local people have been there. Soon, the Smithsonian will be coming to them. A traveling exhibit on democracy from the Smithsonian Museum of American History will be on display at the Fort Dodge Public Library March 28th to May 10th. The Fort Dodge will be the first stop for this exhibit. In preparation for the exhibit, a number of local residents were interviewed about their thoughts on democracy. Those recorded voices to votes interviews will be key to the a key piece of the exhibit. The 650-square-foot exhibit will contain campaign souvenirs, voter memorabilia, and materials related to the protest movement. It will explore themes such as definitions of democracy, the meaning of votes, how voting body in the United States has diversified, and women's suffrage. Some of the lesser-known founders of the American democracy will also be introduced. Securing a traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian is a big win for the community. The fact that Fort Dodge is the very first stop on the exhibit's itinerary make it even a bigger win. A lot of work has been done to get the exhibit here. Much of the work was done by the fine folks at Main Street Fort Dodge and the Fort Dodge Public Library. We thank them and every other individual and group that labored behind the scenes for bringing a little bit of the Smithsonian to our community. When the exhibit gets here, we urge everyone to go see it. This will be a unique opportunity no one should miss. Okay, it's now 8:21, and we move now to the obituary page. David S. Peterson, age 64, of Dakota City, passed away on Tuesday, January 21st, 2020, at the Humboldt County Memorial Hospital. David is survived by his wife, Lynn, his daughter, Paxton, mother, Joyce, of Dakota City, brother, Bill, and Sherry Peterson, of Humboldt, sister, Kathy Goff Mickelson, of Humboldt, brother, Terry and Donna Peterson, of Des Moines, Lynn and Dan Forgey of Colombe, South Dakota, brother Stuart Peterson of Colorado, and sister-in-law Lori Peterson of Bozeman, Montana. David is preceded in death by his father and brother Steve. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, January 24th, at Mason Linhart Funeral Home in Humboldt. A private funeral services will be held Saturday for the family and friends. Mason Linhart Funeral Home will be assisting the family. Beverly A. Songson, age 82, of Lorenz, passed away on Friday, January 24th, 2020, at the Marion Home in Fort Dodge. Funeral services will be 1 p.m. Monday, January 27th, 2020, at the Bethany Lutheran Church in Lorenz, with the Reverend Nicholas Thackeray officiating. Visitation will be from 11:30 to 1 p.m. Monday, January 27, 2020, at the Bethany Lutheran Church in Lorenz. Burial will be at the Lorenz Cemetery near Lorenz, Iowa. Powers Funeral Home in Lorenz is handling the arrangements. For online condolences, the obituaries, visit www.powersfh.net. A celebration of life service will be held for Linda Larson in March. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left to the family and the www.brucesfuneralhome.com. And here we have some news from Lauffersweiler's. Francis Patterson, age 83. The funeral is today at 10:30 a.m. Lauffersweiler's Funeral Home. John Condon, age 79. Funeral is Monday at 10 a.m. Lauffersweiler's Funeral Home, and then 10:30 a.m. at Corpus Christi Church. Visitation Sunday, 2 to 6 p.m., Lauffersweiler's Funeral Home. Greg A. Spencer, age 69, funeral Friday, January 31st, 10:30 a.m. at Lauffersweiler's Funeral Home. Visitation Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. at Lauffersweiler's Funeral Home. Daryl L. Becker, age 92, private services at a later date. Angela McLeod, age 45, private services at a later date. Virginia V. Kelly, age 100, memorial services planned for a later date. It is now 8:25, and we move to the religious section. Oops, sorry. We have some religious articles here. Nick Nurse to headline the 24th annual Bishop's Dinner for Catholic Schools. The Catholic School Foundation of the Diocese of Sioux City is pleased to announce Nick Nurse as the keynote speaker for the 24th annual Bishop's Dinner for the Catholic Schools. The event will be held September 12th at the Delta Hotel Center in South Sioux City, Nebraska. The theme for this year's dinner is Let Your Spirit Shine. Nurse is a Carroll native and a Kemper Catholic graduate. As a player, he helped lead Kemper Catholic to the 1985 state basketball championship. He went to play basketball for the University of Northern Iowa and had coaching stints at Grandview University and the NBA G League's Iowa Energy, where he led Iowa championship in 2011. He is currently in his second season as head coach of the Toronto Raptors after guiding the team to its first ever NBA championship in 2019. Nurse coached in Europe for 11 years, beginning in 1996, winning 9 championships and 2 Coach of the Year awards while earning 6 All-Star head coach selections in the British Basketball League. Nurse was named head coach for the Canadian senior men's basketball team in June of 2019. He has also served as an assistant coach in the 2012 Olympics for a host of the British national team. His wife's name is Roberta, and they have 3 sons, Noah, Leo, and Rocky. The Bishop Dinners for Catholic Schools serves the single largest fundraiser benefiting 16 Catholic school systems throughout Northwest Iowa. More than 6,000 students receive faith-based education every year. Proceeds from the 2020 Bishop's Dinner for Catholic Schools will be put into the Catholic Schools Foundation Fund for tuition assistance. Tickets to the dinner go on sale July 15th and can be purchased at www.scdiocese.org or by calling the Diocese of Sioux City at 712-233-7933. Faith Lutheran Church to hold soup lunch and bake sale Sunday. From Harcourt, the Faith Lutheran Church is holding a soup lunch and bake sale from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday at the church. The menu is homemade chicken noodle and vegetable beef, chili, relishes, beverages, and a dessert for a free will offering. Holy Trinity Parish Roast Beef Dinner is Sunday. Holy Trinity Roast Beef Dinner is 4 to 7 p.m. on Sunday at the Corpus Christi Center, 405 North 8th Street. The meal includes roast beef, mashed potatoes, gravy, vegetable, dinner roll, dessert, and beverage. Tickets are $8 for adults, $4 for children, ages 5 through 11. Takeouts will be available. Here is the church spotlight, and the spotlight this week is on the First Congregational United Church of Christ, located at 1611 Williams Drive in Fort Dodge. Phone 515-573-3817. Worship service Sunday, 10 a.m. Sunday school, 9 a.m. First Congregational United Church of Christ is a non-creedal, Christ-centered congregation. We believe that in Jesus Christ, we have found and experienced the grace and love of God. We believe that the Bible is the testimony of how God has been at work in the world, and we believe that we are called to seek and discover God's way in community, seeking together the guidance of the Spirit. Proudly the home of Fort Dodge Preschool since 1973 and a charter member of Icky's for information on the Dodger Preschool. Call 955-6060. Blessed with an active Sunday school program for ages 3 to 12 and growing youth group for grade 3, 5, and 6 and 12. Growing in our mission to serve the community of Fort Dodge, we already support the Lord's Cupboard, DSOC, and Church World Services. More is coming soon. A part of the United Church of Christ, united in uniting denominations, that was first to ordain women in ministry, the first to ordain women or people LGBTQ for ministry, and was the first denomination in the U.S. to call for marriage equality. Committed to seeking justice in the name of Jesus Christ, the UCC always strives to listen to the voices of the least of these and then to respond. Able to be found on Facebook, facebook.com/FDUCC, or online at www.fducc.org. Committed to making the real the motto of the UCC, whoever you are or whatever you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And the pastor is Reverend Gary Bird. And that was the Church Spotlight, First Congregational United Church of Christ. Okay, it's now 8:32, and I think we're going to go to the sports section. Because we don't have any more local news to report. So, Webster City defeats St. Edmund in a double overtime. All Travis Eklund needed was for the first shot to go down. Once it did, the Webster City junior settled in, scoring 8 points in the two overtime sessions to help the Lynx claim a 67-58 victory over St. Edmund here Friday night. Eklund was the leading scorer on the year for Webster City, 8-3 overall, 5-3 in the North Central Conference, finished with 13 points despite missing his first 9 shots from the field. Tyler Olson led the way for the Lynx with a game-high 23 as Carter Neroth added 13. For the Gales, 4-8 and 2-6, Jarris Duncan scored 14, Jed Tracy added 13, and Hayden Meyer finished with 9. We talked to them at halftime about giving better effort because we felt like that was lacking early on, St. Edmund High School head coach Adolf Kochendorfer said. I definitely saw that in the second half. We just made a few mistakes and had some moments where I thought our inexperience showed up. And give Webster City credit because they continue to play just as hard with us. It was a heck of a game and hopefully a great learning experience for us moving forward. After falling behind by as many as 7, the St. Edmund chipped away at the third quarter behind Duncan. Drew Schaefer. The two combined for 15 points as they outscored the Lynx 29. Kyle Glacia and Schaefer started the fourth off with buckets before the Webster City could go on a run of its own. Despite missing 14 free throws, the Lynx were able to force the first overtime on a putback bucket by Olson. That came after freshman Ty McKinney scored 4 points in just 34 seconds. We weren't strong there with the ball late, not like we needed to be, Kochendorfer said. We haven't been in a lot of close game situations, and you need to be in them to learn how to play. the game gets tighter, gets called different, and you have to be tough with the basketball. The two teams exchanged baskets in the first extra session as Duncan and Tracy scored for St. Edmund, with Eklund and Olsen adding points for the Lynx. In the second overtime, Olsen got Webster City going with a three-point play. Meyer made it 57-56 before a 5-0 burst for the Lynx gave them breathing room. Webster City made five of six shots from the line to seal the win, as Eklund sank three and Drake Doering sank two. Duncan led the Gales with eight rebounds and Meyer added seven. Brock Stanek finished with six boards. Olsen had nine boards, with Eklund grabbing six and both Neuroth and Doering five. Webster City heads to Gilbert on Saturday to face Martinsdale St. Mary's, with St. Edmund taking on Algona Tuesday as they begin a four-game road trek that also includes Iowa Falls, Alden, Clear Lake, and Humble. Lynx handle St. Edmund girls. Webster City prevails in a defensive slugfest. St. Edmund girls played the kind of defense head coach Steve Neuberger can appreciate here Friday night. Now he just needs to see offense come together. The Gales held Webster City Taylor McKinney scoreless throughout the second half, but were unable to fight out of a big deficit, falling 39-15. McKinney, the career scoring leader of the Lynx, 8-6 overall, 5-4 in the North Central Conference, had a game-high 11 points, all of it coming in the opening 16 minutes. "I was so proud of our defensive efforts," Neuberger said. "We knew if we took McKinney away and tried to do the same to Grace Hoverstein, we would force someone else to beat us." As the Gales 0-12-0-8 have done in the past few weeks, they put across country standout Aubrey Bemrick on McKinney. Previously, fellow distance runner Abby Lindwer was used to bother the talented senior. "Aubrey did a great job," Neuberger said. "She also has some height, and that played a factor. Gracie Harvey was excellent in helping to force McKinney to get rid of the ball. It's really nice to have great athletes that excel in other sports like cross country, play basketball, and use their abilities on the court." The Lynx received 14 points off the bench from Jenna Miller and Lee Cash. Adelaide Schwant had 11 rebounds, 3 steals, and 2 block shots. Leading the way for St. Edmund was Lee Neverman, as a junior scored 7 points and with 4 rebounds. Cambry McBride added 6 points, 4 boards, and 2 steals. The Gales are set to play 5 straight on the road starting Monday at Peyton Sherdan. Webster City hosts Clear Lake on Tuesday. Fort Dodge girls explode past the Bobcats. Dodger closed game on a 32 run to complete the season sweep. For nearly three quarters on Friday, many of Fort Dodge girls basketball team's year-long struggles were holding them back against Marshalltown. And then the Dodgers came to life and showed signs of what they could be moving forward. Fort Dodge Senior High closed the game with an explosive 30-2 burst to turn a three-point game into a 57-26 rout of the Bobcats, completing the season sweep of the CIML Iowa Conference rival. Junior Cheyenne Miller Hamid was the catalyst, scoring 15 of her 19 points in the fourth quarter alone. The Dodgers, 4-10 overall, 2-4 in the league, closed the third quarter with 13 unanswered points and then completely dominated the fourth period as well as a flurry of forced turnovers and fast break points. We really got things rolling when we were able to execute our full court press, said Fort Dodge head coach Scott Messerly said. That was the turning point. It had been a frustrating night up until that point. We were just kind of going through the motions. And I think being off the last 2 days, well, I can't find that article. I'm sorry. Oh, here it is. Due to the weather affected us, we were sluggish. It was good to see us play with more sense of urgency late. We started to hustle more and brought some energy that had been lacking. Sophomore guard Torrey Bennett added 13 points for the Dodgers. Classmate Jalen Adams knocked down a trifecta of three-point baskets for 9 points, while Aleha Palmer finished with 8. A Bennett bucket, back-to-back Adams triples, and a Palmer three-point pushed a tenuous three-point lead into a comfortable 38-24. Miller Hamid then scored 17 consecutive Fort Dodge senior high points over the next 8 minutes, and the Bobcats went without a single point in the final 5:29 of regulation. We didn't have many defensive rebounds in the first half, and you just couldn't shake them until that stretch late in the third quarter, Messerly said. Cheyenne really got going, which was great to see. That's big for her confidence. She has that potential, which is something we'll need the rest of the way into her senior year. Marshalltown committed 34 turnovers. The Dodgers had defeated the Bobcats last month, as well as 56-37. The Dodgers returned to action on Monday for a makeup varsity contest at home against Mason City. Thomas, Cats too much for the Dodgers. The Fort Dodge boys basketball team has a better part of 3 weeks to decide how they want to finish the 2019-20 season. The wins and losses won't matter if the rest of the way as much as the pride and the heart they are willing to show toward each other. After controlling the entire first quarter against CIML, Iowa Conference rival Marshalltown on Friday, the Dodgers lost their edge and let Bobcat Ammon Lee Thomas run free during a 60-40 setback inside the Fort Dodge Senior High gym. Thomas, MHS's leading scorer, came off the bench as punishment for arriving to a team shoot around late. By the end of the night, it was the slender sophomore guard who was able to get the most punishing. Thomas had 32 of his career high 34 points in the final three quarters as the Bobcats completed the season sweep of Fort Dodge Senior High. We really fought and outplayed them in the first period, but you look up and it's only 5-2, Dodger head coach Tom Daniels said. We've had that happen a few times at home this year in the opening half, where you give a great effort and we're right there defensively, but we just can't extend the lead. After that, it was just a combination of a lot of things. Communications breakdowns, not being able to run a set on offense, struggling with our post defense, and losing Thomas more times than I can count. So we've got to get something figured out in a hurry and to get on the same page as a program and show some resilience on our home court. Thomas had 13 points in the second quarter, Marshalltown 4-9 overall, and 2-4 in the CIML Iowa. Turned the page from a slow start and pulled ahead at 24-18, a 7-0 run to start the second half ballooned to a lead of 13. Fort Dodge wasn't able to get within a single digits of the rest of the way in dropping its 12th consecutive contest. Senior Tyson Kershaw led the Dodgers with 13 points before falling out early in the fourth quarter. Fort Dodge has 20 for 27 at the free throw line, but managed only 9 field goals, including 3 buckets to the entire second half. Marshalltown, meanwhile, was 0 for 11 from the floor and first period, and then shot 56% and racked up 59 points the rest of the way. The Bobcats drilled 9 triples, including 5 by Thomas, who had 18 points and 10 rebounds last month in the victory over the Dodgers. I thought Bryson Bell and James Daniel gave us good minutes, Daniel said. Sophomore Drake Kellyan came in at the end and did a nice job. That's what we need more of, guys who are willing to do the little things, embrace their roles, and work together as a team, because individual basketball is not going to work, not here or anywhere else. Fort Dodge returns to action Monday at home against Mason City 4-8-1-5 in a makeup affair. It is now 8:46, and we have some wrestling news here. Teams will be looking to knock Clarion Goldfield Dawes off the North Central Iowa Conference wrestling perch here Saturday as the league tournament. Action begins at 10 a.m. Last year, the Cowboys won their second consecutive tourney title and finished first for the fourth time in the past 5 years. Clear Lake was runner-up a year ago, with Hampton Dumont placing third in the final standings. Humboldt, Webster City, Algona, Iowa Falls, Alden, St. Edmund rounded out the team's scoring. Clarion Goldfield Dawes crowned 3 individual champions a year ago in Carter Dietz, Sam Wiggins, and Spencer Trenery. They also racked up points thanks to 6 silvers and a third. A handful of returning champions are back in the field, including Webster City's Cameron Fexvone and Sam Nelson from Clear Lake, Hampton Dumont's Jacob Marzahn, and Riley Burke from Iowa Falls Alden. Another 53 underclassmen placed in the top 6 a season ago at the meet. One of those St. Edmund juniors, Ryan Duckett, is not expected to be in action as he continues to recover from an injury. Nelson, a junior, is chasing his 3rd NCC title, while Fetzumophone, a sophomore, goes after his 2nd. Remington Hansen and Reed Abbas each won championships 2 years ago as freshmen for Clarion Goldfield Dawes. They were runners-up a season ago. Last year, Webster City's Drake Doolittle and Clear Lake's Eric Fought became the 9th of the 10 wrestlers to capture the 4 conference titles. Ranked wrestlers include Fetzumophone, Class 2A, number 1, 106, and Humboldt's Cole Nelson, 2A, number 4, 106, Creston Craven, number 9, 120, Colton Goodell, number 10 at 220, and Clarion Goldfield Dawes' Tyler Stein, 1A, number 8 at 113, Hansen, number 8 at 138, and Abbas, number 4, 145, at 220. Nelson is 7th at 126, Marzahn, 10th and 132, Iowa Falls, Alden, Albert Selmeron is 6th at 138 in 2A. It is now 8:49. The Fort Dodge boys swim team will host the CIML conference swim meet today. Action begins at noon at the Dodger pool. Joining the Dodgers in the pool will be Marshalltown, Mason City, Southeast Polk, Waukee, and West Des Moines Valley. It's great to be able to swim at home, Fort Dodge head coach Ashley Beaumont said. Since Rusty Garst Invitational got canceled, we haven't been in the pool for a while. This is the first time the Dodgers have swam at home since their December 16th duel against Mason City. The Dodgers' home Rusty Garst Invitational was canceled due to inclement weather last Saturday. It's a very fast pool. Teams love to come and compete in a fast pool, Beaumont said. There will be definitely some tough competition with defending state champion Waukee in action. Our guys will be rested up and set up for a good day. Fort Dodge will host the district swim meet February 8th. And swim meet begins today, Saturday, at the Dodger pool at noon. And it's now 8:51, and I think we're going to check the police court and do the weather and call it a day. Here is the magistrate court, Webster County, Friday. Domestic assault, Mark Allen Lansaw, age 53, of Mason City. Court date set for February 26th. Fifth degree theft, Gina Kyrus of Kyrus Anthony, age 27, 106 North 10th Street, apartment 607. Dismissed. Failure to appear, Gina Kyrus Anthony, age 27, 106 North 10th Street, apartment 607, 5 days in jail, suspended. Possession of a controlled substance, Cassie Ann Thompson, age 19, 1819 First Avenue North, preliminary hearing, waived. Unlawful possession of prescription drugs, Cassie Ann Thompson, age 19, 1819 First Avenue North, preliminary hearing, waived. Possession of drug paraphernalia, Cassie Ann Thompson, age 19, 1819 First Avenue North, continued 180 days. Driving while barred, Katario Jamar Roby, age 33, 903 10th Avenue Southwest, preliminary hearing, waived. And here is the police log from Thursday in Fort Dodge. Theft in the 200 block of Avenue O. Harassment was reported in the 100 block of South 29th Street. One sex abuse call was reported. 5 domestic calls were reported. Burglary was reported at the 700 block of First Avenue South. A shoplifter was reported in the 2900 block of First Avenue South. A shoplifter was reported in the 1200 block of First Avenue South. Trespassing was reported in the 600 block of Central Avenue. A shoplifter was reported in the 3000 block of First Avenue South. Here is the weather, and today it will be mostly cloudy, high around 27, a low around 14, a wind west-northwest 9 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly cloudy, high around 28, low around 18. Monday, cloudy, high around 28, low around 20. And Tuesday, cloudy, high around 32, a low around 22. So it's good. We're not getting any snow or ice, so that's good for us. And please be careful out there if you're walking around. It's this ice can make it very slippery. I want to thank, we want to thank the folks. Well, this is the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger, and we want to thank the good folks at the Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years, and we thank you for listening. With Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, we just really appreciate you. And if we appreciate feedback, so if you have any feedback, please let us know at 515-243-6833. I'll say that number again, 515-243-6833. Have a great weekend, and please be safe out there. Thank you.